This is the General Overseas Service of All India Radio.
We will now begin today's press review, scripted by Sanat Kumar Sharma.
President Vladimir Putin has made his choice of successor to lead Russia after he steps down next year. His trusted ally and close associate of 17 years, first Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, president in the March 2nd election. On Monday, the United Russia Party formally named him as its candidate. Mr. Putin's support and gesture of allowing United Russia to field him as its number one candidate, even though he was not a party member, meant a landslide election earlier this month. The Hindu and the editorial, A Time of Succession, writes that the very fact that Medvedev is Mr. Putin's chosen successor renders the presidential election a one-horse race. The Russian president is at the peak of his popularity as he completes his second four-year term, an incredible 87% of Russians approve of his policies. According to an opinion poll conducted this month, Mr. Putin is leaving to his successor a resurgent country with a roaring economy, a restored global role and a stable political system, a solid basis for the further rejuvenation of the Russian Federation. He is handing over the reins of power to the first Soviet generation of politicians to himself in the globalized environment as a more democratic, open and competitive power. When Mr. Medvedev, 42, completes the virtual formality of getting elected, he will become Russia's youngest leader in modern history, 5 years younger than Mr. Putin was when he ascended the Kremlin in 2000. An expert in Roman law, Mr. Medvedev has the reputation of being a progressive liberal with a razor-sharp intellect and an ability to think big. As chairman of the board of Gazprom for the past 7 years, he has overseen the natural gas's monopolies 50-fold growth in the market value to make it the world's fifth largest company. He also supervised key federal programs in the spheres of health, education, housing, food production and demography aimed at improving the standards of living of millions of Russians. Mr. Medvedev has vowed to continue his mentor's course, which has rescued the country from collapse and averted civil war. He has asked Mr. Putin to be Prime Minister in his future administration. Signal full support to the next president in steering Russia along the path of all-round modernization. Mr. Medvedev's ride poses a challenge to New Delhi, how to retain the warmth and intensity of bilateral relations with a new Russian leadership that proclaims the country's European identity, has no sentimental attachment to Soviet era Hindi Rusi II, and must not be taken for granted. Commenting on glad tidings for Russia, writes that riding on a huge wave of popularity, Mr. Putin knows that he can successfully project Mr. Medvedev, never mind if he has no power base of his own, as Russia's third elected president. Mr. Putin is probably banking on the former head of the presidential administration, a loyalist, to return to the reins of power to him at some point. True, the current Russian constitution prohibits a third presidential. But the fact that Mr. Medvedev has openly asked Mr. Putin to continue as his PM suggests Mr. Putin may have a strategy in place. This could be realized once Russia's efforts at working out a grand reunion with Belarus bear fruit. But such an event would call for a new constitution, which could conceivably spell Mr. Putin's formal return to the helm with even more power. Russia is not the bear it once was. A massive brain drain and demographic crisis have evidently left the country smaller in terms of population as well as stature and plagued by problems like alcoholism, AIDS, racism, violence and xenophobia. Yet President Putin's rule has inarguably brought a relative economic prosperity to Russia, a new Russia that seems far more compact and amenable to effective strategic management. With its strategic assets intact, the economy was the only major constraint in Russia's exercising its traditional countervailing role to balance the US. So the country's economic revival can only spell good news for a world that yearns for a new order.
You are listening to today's press review, scripted by Sanat Kumar Sharma. You are with us in the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. Best of AIR in this exclusive program. You can now listen to Internet. written in rural India. And the subject is Bridging Distance.
देखो बिटुआ इनका मुनिया यह है दुनिया
Wow, wonderful, unbelievable. The scene is believing. I saw a young villager driving a pedal-driven loop tricycle with an antenna. Inside the tricycle, there was a personal computer with accessories. A mini showcase containing snacks, stationery, and a batch of cars placed below the PC at Mandhana village, about 25 kilometers away from Kanpur in North India. This unique, shock and vibration resistant mobile cyber cafe is named Infothela.
He has Infothela. He has Infothela. He has Infothela. He has Infothela.
A thela is a tricycle rickshaw used by vendors in rural areas and cities to sell vegetables, fruits, groceries, etc. The concept of direct selling is adopted here to take information to the doorsteps of the rural masses.
Telephone, email, fax, or via internet, but you can't telephone, or to our manager, the picture we have.
I saw people thronging to the mobile unit. The driver cum operator assisted the people in telephony, email, internet, etc.
The village will progress. It is a good and cheap facility.
Our name is Kishan Kumar. We are Gandhana. We are here.
My name is Kishan Kumar. I live in Mandhana village. These days, sugar mills are running in loss. Therefore, we are unable to sell and get money for our sugarcane crops on time.
So we decided to change our farming to soya beans and sunflower, which give good returns. Since we have no knowledge of farming these crops, we made use of the computer and internet on the thela to gather information and know-how. God willing, we shall harvest soya bean and sunflower in the next season.
Ambo was wonderstruck at this digital revolution to bridge the digital divide. A motorcade came zooming and stopped near the Infothela. I saw the director of the Indian Institute of Technology Kanpur, Professor Sanjay Dande, and his team, along with some guests, alighting from the cars. One of the guests was Dr. N. Seshagiri, the pioneer and one of the father figures of the information revolution in India. I thought to myself, Mera to din khul gaya. A wonderful day is ahead of me. As I have the masterminds of bringing IT to the masses right here in front of me. Professor Sanjay was more than willing to explain about the Infothela.
One of the cost-effective is called as 802.11b, a data network over which you send a voice. Between Kanpur to Lucknow, we will set up a link, a multi-hop wireless communication link. And these are the 15-20 kilometer hops. And the data packets are sent from one point to another. And at every point, there is a circle of influence. Any device, any mobile device, can catch the data signal or the voice signal. So you can have a mobile device such as Infothela, and these Infothelas can move around in the village, and it can be next to the mandi or it can be next to the hut and provide agricultural information and banking services it can be near the panchayat and it can provide administrative information services, or it can be in the middle of the village in the evening and it can provide entertainment.
The Wi-Fi technology is legalized in India and is open up to 2.4 gigahertz for unlicensed use. Supplementing Professor Sanjay's comments, Professor Prashant Kumar, who designed the Infotela, told me about its cost, its power system, and its capacity to generate self-employment, just like the public call offices, PCOs.
We have a battery. This is on a mobile platform. We take it to a nearby city where the power is. Can be charged overnight. Estimated cost is ₹60,000, including the computer. We are providing space on the trailer to carry other things. We are calling it mini market. So it will provide employment to many persons. Those people who are educated in the villages, they do not want to go to the field and work it. So it will be just an ideal job for them.
As my conversation with the technocrats continued, more surprises were in store for me. I was told that the Infotela is designed to accommodate diagnostic equipment like blood pressure and blood sugar testing apparatus, some other primary diagnostic and testing equipment, and even net-based telemedicine. Further learned that the Infotela is part of a project known as the Digital Gambit Claim, DGP, a project that is currently operational in the 85-kilometer stretch between Kanpur and Lucknow with Wi-Fi repeaters to take net-based services to the unconnected India. Saroha, a remote village about 65 kilometers from Kanpur, without electricity and proper roads, is on the digital map of India, thanks to the Digital Gambit Claim project. I decided to accompany the IIT team and the guests to Saroha to see for myself how to go digital without power. As our motorcade moved towards Saroha, our interactions revolved around initiatives that are taking shape in different parts of India to bridge the digital divide. One often hears the view that leading-edge technology like the internet is irrelevant to the majority of the Indian population, as many of them live below the poverty line. It is said these technologies are luxury items which the rural masses can't afford. But Professor Sanjay Bhande says that this view is unfounded and without any basis.
The most interesting thing in India is that the smartest people are the rural people. It is useful, they know how to make use of it. So to think that they are not capable of understanding, I think is a myth. They are very smart people and they understand what is useful and what is useless. If it is useful, they will definitely make use of it. Irrespective of whether they have to pay for it or they have to learn for it or whether they have to, but is it really truly effective? Is it truly useful? That is the question. And that has to be answered by them, not by you or me.
Technology is a luxury if its intentions are purely to find a respectful position among researchers and elites. But technology becomes a necessity if it addresses very problems that keep the rural masses poor and underdeveloped. The green revolution in agriculture, the white revolution in milk production, space and satellite revolution are based on modern technologies that have immensely helped ordinary people. Internet technology has huge, immense potential for the masses. Talking Dr. Seshagiri.
Five major areas are massively bridging the digital divide and converting them into digital dividends. One is distance education in local language over the internet. Then there is telemedicine, job matching because unemployment has to be reduced, local development planning, market reach, and so on. All these use internet.
most of the rural communities in India are within 25 kilometers of optic fiber network. So the focus of researchers in rural communications has been to solve the last 25 kilometer problem and realize Mahatma Gandhi's vision of a sustainable village through culturally appropriate use of technology to empower the last man in Gandhi's talisman. Wireless technology has emerged as a solution to link the missing last few miles. IIT Chennai has successfully launched a collection of wireless tele-internet kiosks using Codex technology in the Nellore district of Tamil Nadu. This high-tech wireless technology delivered to the common man of Tamil Nadu benefits so far unknown and unheard, as this story tells us.
My name is Sundar Rajan.
My name is Sundar Rajan. I own a cyber cafe at Nellore near Madurai, Tamil Nadu. I have installed a web camera on my computer. Recently, a farmer brought to me a few diseased lady fingers. I took the photos of the diseased lady fingers and mailed it to Tamil Nadu Agriculture University in Coimbatore. Within a day, the experts diagnosed the disease and remedy was posted on their website. Really, net can work wonders for farmers.
It is said, nothing succeeds like success. The successful experiment in Tamil Nadu began to replicate in many forms in many Indian states like Maharashtra, Haryana and Gujarat.
We set up internet-based agriculture marketing service. This has visibly enhanced marketability and exportability of our agri products through e-commerce. We started a major pirate IT project in 70 villages in Varna in Kolhapur district in Maharashtra. Lot of databases have been developed in local language, Marathi, and updated by the villages themselves. Now this successful pilot project spread to 200 villages of the Parvara project near Loni, Maharashtra. Here the villages designed their own agriculture database proforma and are updating the database. Now this is spreading throughout the country to Andhra Pradesh, to West Bengal, Haryana, many other states. The self-employed women's association called Seva, with 200,000 women in 800 villages in Gujarat, he is now adopting digitalization and digital methods.
Kisan bhaiya, arre karni hai aapko fasal ki taiyari, to kheti baari ki taiyari bhi hai, aur bazaar ke bhaav ko nu fasal hogi, mera matlab ko nu sabzi ki liye ko nu.
The Infotech revolution in India is most visible in the arena of e-governance. It was a surprise for me when Dr. Seshagiri reveals that India is the first country in the world to adopt e-governance way back in 1974.
India was the first country in the world to start e-governance on a nationwide scale as early as 1974. The National Informatics Center set up an e-governance network called NICNET with a computer center around a three-track satellite dish in every one of the 540 districts in the country.
Aur bhaiyo bano jo aap log jaate hain tab tak to usme bhi kuch aise baatein hongi jo aapko nahi pata hongi to is shiksha par yahi baat ke aapko sari tab tak ki jankari aur pata lag jayegi kya kya form bharna hai kis se milna hai kya karna hai kis.
Today a large number of Indian states like Andhra Pradesh, Karnataka and Kerala are fast moving towards 100% e-governance. The rural folk in the western Indian state of Goa use info kiosks known as Mahithi Ghar for effective and prompt action.
Within an hour, everyone goes. Our Puran Goa Alpalta, our Mahithi Ghar, ya cover kiosk, jo sarkari office ke maata.
My name is Edwina Gomes. I live in old Goa. I use Mahithi Ghar for info kiosks situated opposite to government offices to submit application forms electronically by spending 15 rupees. I get these forms free of cost at the office, yet I spend 15 rupees because action on electronic application is quicker and faster.
As we journeyed on, our car entered on the bumpy and muddy roads of Saroha. Suddenly, one of us spotted the tower built in Saroha village. I could smell and feel the pulse of real India, unpolluted India, and the lure of its pristine nature. As the technical staff checked the system, Professor Sanjay Bhande explained the Digital Galactic Plane project to me.
We wanted to explore as to how the latest developments of information and communication technology can be brought to the advantage of rural India. So how to bring the highest of the technology to the lowest of the strata was our goal. Now this village called Saroha, we have set up a pole and we have set up a mobile station. And you can make even a telephone call from there, we have phone calls abroad. You can also have a laptop in your hand and you can download on a mobile laptop internet information at the rate of 3.5 Mbps. You can also hold a video conference. So enormous amount of empowerment can be provided to the rural society. Infrastructure.
Supporting Dr. Sanjay's views, Professor Praveen Bhagwat, the converter of this high-band Wi-Fi of 802.11b indoor technology for outdoor applications, told me.
Digital Galactic Plane is actually a wireless connectivity project. Our aim is to innovate technology and solutions such that cost of the aircraft be reduced. We have customized innovated on top of technology called Wi-Fi. Getting to bring the cost below ₹10,000 per connection line. And what we are finding is that our first application which has found the most traction among the people here is actually the employee.
The villagers throng the infrastructure consisting of one PC, one laptop, one personal digital assistant, a voice over internet protocol, and an antenna as access point. The villagers had to walk 6 kilometers one way to reach the nearest working public telephone booth are excited and euphoric about these facilities which have reached their doorstep. Their excitement is doubled as the charges have just, unlike the PC owner who charged arbitrarily.
5-6 kilometers jana hota tha.
We had to walk 5-6 kilometers to make a phone call. Now we have it in our village.
It saves time
and money. Youth like us can do some business. I would say brighter days are ahead for us. Crowds gather to make phone calls. When they give ₹100 a telephone, they would definitely give ₹50 here.
मेरा नाम राम कुमार है जी
मैं सरोहा का रहने वाला हूँ
My name is Ram Kumar.
I live in Saroha village.
I have a mango orchard. The agents buy mangoes.
There are
huge profits in the big markets.
So they found the of
big cities through the internet from the village itself and contacted wholesale merchants to sell our mango
harvest.
Their rate is 50 rupees per box. We are happy because we have a good price for our mangoes, but also paying in cash. Thanks to the internet facility.
Internet ka bahut bahut dhanyavaad.
Enlightened villagers like Om Shankar believe that net-based education is an effective alternative to the poor quality school education.
This will substitute the formal education. Children would say they want to watch Kindle.
पढ़ाना शुरू करे तो उस स्कूल से ज्यादा अच्छा स्कूल
द strengthen the mood of rural people, the government of India recently launched Vidyavahini, Vehicle of Knowledge Project, aimed at connecting 60,000 schools through internet and internet, costing 60 billion Indian rupees. The pilot project has already been undertaken in 140
schools.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating. Therefore, I approached Dr. S. K. Manocha, Director of Research and Development, Indian Telephone Industries, Bangalore, who is making an on-the-spot assessment of the capability of the DGT project for possible mass production and wider distribution. Dr. Manocha said,
good alternative, very low weight, so that it can be just transported anywhere. Feature which is available. It can work under an environment which is noisy. I'm looking at finding niche markets, see how volumes can come up. If something like 10 to 12,000 villages market is possible, straight away that will start manufacturing. This is one of the very good initiative. This fills up the gap.
Dessert of wireless rural connectivity, both for data and voice communication, tastes sweet as the people in rural areas enjoy significant economic, social and financial benefits. This will have a marked positive impact on their quality of life. This will enable rural India to move truly towards a real global village, which Indians termed ages ago as Vasudhaiv Kutumbakam.
Only a proportionate representation of society, cultures and values of all countries can bring nearer the goal of Vasudhaiv Kutumbakam. World is a family. Making internet a means for fulfilling this proportionate representation is entirely in our career. We are definitely a business of
bridging the digital divide, information and communication technology revolution, which really brings about the concept of a global village.
Armed with technology and knowledge, the ignited soul, compared to any resource, is the most powerful resource. On the earth, above the earth, under the earth, wrote President of India, Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam. As I bid adieu to them, I said to myself, in this century of knowledge power, can their minds ignited with knowledge and fly on the wings of fire to transform India into a developed nation by 2020. The Wi-Fi and its applications like Infotela will change rural India just as the way mobile phones change the communication mode of urban Indians. So we can proudly say, yehi hai right choice. This is the right choice.
Mera dil khushiyon mein lagi, hum aap ka dil le hue, hum karam hai, hum dil karam hai, kahan gul hai.
This exclusive program you are listening to the best of the archive. The production was of D. Thomas. You are with us at Jim Lewis and the radio. Today's commentary on tough road ahead on climate change. The script by Sanjeev Kumar.
The Bali Action Plan that has emerged from the UN Conference on Climate Change at Bali is not only a roadmap for the diplomatic journey for over 2 years, but also a clear indication of things to come. The pushing and shoving has already begun. It is just as well that delegates from the 190 countries who gathered struggled so hard over the fine print and the roadmap. For the resolution will determine how nations will work for the next climate meet in Denmark in 2009, which has to come out with a more binding global warming pact. There isn't much time either, as the validity of the Kyoto Protocol, which mandates industrialized countries to cut greenhouse gases, GHG emission by an average of 2% below 1990 levels by 2010, runs out in 2012. The urgency is all the more as climatologists predict, among other effects, a 2 degrees Celsius rise in global temperatures over the next century as a result of the projected rise in CO2 and other GHGs like methane in the atmosphere. The Bali Summit is making room for optimism. Although a definitive agreement on emissions targets remains elusive, countries that previously blocked any action at all on finding climate are now apparently ready to cooperate. China and the US have the two biggest carbon footprints, so the Chinese contingent's willingness to join in the fight against global warming and the strength of Washington is left isolated as the remaining major defaulter. Washington argues that the treaty is lopsided since it doesn't quite developing countries to reduce pollution as much as developed countries. But with countries like India fighting on relentless pressure, the US, which accounts for 24% of the world's total output of carbon dioxide, apparently retracted its insistence on the imposition of binding commitments on developing countries. However, there's little to suggest that the US may agree to mandatory cuts in GHG emissions anytime soon. Which means, all the other agreements reached in Bali are the concerted global action that's necessary. Building low-carbon economies, for instance, is an important part of any strategy to combat climate change and a relaxed cap on CO2, as Washington demands will only undercut the Kyoto Protocol. The United Nations Conference on Global Warming has produced a mere statement of intent whose fulfillment will hinge substantially on the attitude of the Bush administration. The year 2009 has been set as the target year to fight global warming, when the 190 countries hope to conclude the landmark pact. Climate change, now that the numbers have been crunched beyond dispute, requires cooperation and coordination of an order not adequately in evidence at Bali. Consider the parameters for satisfaction in the Bali roadmap finally produced at the summit. The US is happy that it survived the acute pressure by Europe that rich countries commit by cutting by 2020 greenhouse gas emissions 40% below 1990 levels. Europe can be satisfied that the US at least has, against its long-standing isolationism post-Kyoto, committed to staying on board for the roadmap and working towards a long-term global goal for emission reductions by 2009. Developing countries have won the promise of financial and technological assistance to take actions that would bring measurable, reportable, and verifiable emission cuts in an overall program of sustainable development. The Bali roadmap is to deliver by 2009 a successor protocol to Kyoto. Along this since Kyoto, not only has the expectation of global warming been enhanced, there is now extraordinary public support for measures to curb it. America's stunning tactics have allowed the rest of the world to escape binding commitments. But popular opinion shows that there is a moral advantage to be gained by individual countries unilaterally considering domestic action. Besides this, developing countries, especially India and China, need to be much more proactive in pressuring rich nations to commit faster to binding cuts. At the same time, Washington hasn't budged from its orchestrated stand that the developing world must make tougher commitments. The US believes that big emitters among developing countries like India should also agree to such targets. India firmly resisted the imposition of targets, but agreed that it would take concrete measures to reduce its carbon footprint. In effect, we are to set our own targets rather than external commitments. The singularly positive outcome of the conference was to include forest conservation in any future discussion on global warming. Billions of dollars are to be invested to guard against illegal logging. If deforestation accounts for 20% of global emissions, the next conference will also address the central issues. the demand for timber and palm oil, the widespread corruption and the endemic poverty. Climate change has acquired a wider canvas post-Bali. Under the Bali roadmap, the West is to provide assistance in terms of clean technologies with subsidized costs to help others reduce emissions. But the action has only begun, and it is a quick road ahead to 2009.
On tough road ahead on climate change. The script was by Alka Sanjeev Kumar. This is the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. In our program of light music, you can now listen to Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan.
Kilohertz on metro band 13,605 kilohertz
on the relative meter band and 15,155 kilohertz on the 19 meter band. So until then, goodbye. Jai Hind.